From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of November 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois, about the commodity markets. A bit later in the program, we'll check the cash grain market with the folks up at the Andersons facility in Delphi, Indiana. And as we close out the program, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. And along the way, I'll update you on why tile is important. That's field tile to the production agricultural system in the United States. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of the University of Illinois and Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat at $6.99.5. The high, the low at $6.80.5. Settlement price there at $6.90.25, down $4 for the day. July down a penny at $7.64.75. December corn a $5.81 settlement price, finished 5.25 higher. The March at $5.94.5, up 5.25. And the May a $6.01 top and $6.01 settlement price at 5.25 higher. July futures 6.04 1/4, up 5.5 cents. December contract 5.49 1/2, up 4 3/4. November beans $12.27.5, 3 3/4 higher. January 12.37.5, up 3.5. The March at 12.44 3/4, up 4.25. July contract 12.51 a nickel higher. Next year's November at 11.86.5, up 7 cents for the day. December bean meal up $1.20 at $3.38.90. December bean oil today, $49.90, 27 cents higher. Mercantile exchange numbers finish like this. The nearby live cattle contract at 97.70 for the December, down 55. February at 101, 17.5, 67.5 cents lower. November feeders at 110.87.5, down 67.5. January futures at 111.40, down 65 cents. And December lean hogs today, $66.77.5 for 100 pounds. December lean hogs finished 57.5 cents higher on this Wednesday afternoon. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The nearby crude oil contract is currently trading in the December at $84.69 a barrel, up 79 cents. Ethanol at $2.39 is a penny and 3/10 higher. Natural gas at $3.83 6/10, down 3 4/10 cents. The RBOB at $2.14, that's 3 1/10 cents higher. And the heating oil or diesel fuel up 3 9/10 at $2.33 2/10 cents a gallon. Gold futures in the November contract, a settlement price down $19.30 at $1,337.10. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,197, currently just about 9 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 76.46 is down 0.25. The CRB index at 305.14 is up 0.16 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. This afternoon should be partly sunny around, a high of about 58 degrees, west winds at 11 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 17. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 37. Northwest winds at 10 miles an hour. Thursday, a 30% chance of rain. That after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, mostly cloudy, a high near 50 degrees. North-northwest winds between 10 and 17, gusting all the way to 25. And Thursday night, mostly cloudy skies, a low of just 28. And the north-northwest winds between 11 and 15. Friday should be mostly sunny, a high near 43, with winds gusting to 22. Friday night, clear, a low of 24. Saturday, sunny, a high of 48. Saturday night, mostly clear and a low of 30 degrees. By the time we get to Sunday, it'll be sunny with a high of 58 degrees. Sunday night, mostly clear and a low around 40. On Monday, sunny skies, the high of 60. Monday night, 42 and clear. And on Tuesday, the sky should be sunny with a high of 62 degrees.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson is in this afternoon filling in for Paul Cooley, who's away from the office today. Thanks so much, Jackie, for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome, Ted.
Let's start out with the latest news just released, actually, out of Washington, D.C. The Fed has made some announcements, and they're expecting to, spend about $600 billion, I suppose.
Yes, they are, and the big question now comes, what is this going to do to inflation? And I think the reaction on the board was pretty obvious. The U.S. dollar had been trading higher for quite a long time during the session today and immediately took a dive. And we saw gold, which in the overnight session or in the electronic session right now is only trading down $10 after having traded, and that's about $25 off the lows. So concerns for inflation certainly uglying their head right now. Let's just put it that way.
And while I did say $600 million, they'll spend more than that because they already have a buying spree in order. This is for Treasury bonds. And it'll be something closer to $850 to $950 billion. The $600 billion, I think, is supposed to come over 8 months. The rest of it probably comes as there's some expiring bonds or something else that they have to buy back or trade in. I don't recall all of the details, but it should be interesting to watch. And their expectation is they'd like to control the interest rates and move them lower. And I'm wondering just a bit about this, and maybe you can help me out, because the bank swap rate, I think, is really close to zero, or what the overnight lending rate is. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so what they're hoping to do is to bring down interest rates for you and I and normal consumers?
Well, by coming back in, and actually my understanding is just pretty much the opposite of that. And that's why there's concern on inflation is what they're trying to do is they are trying somewhat to control the rates to keep them from becoming runaway type of rates. But at the same time, in order to buy the bonds, they're printing more money is what they're doing. And when you saw the reaction on the board, that's pretty much, I think, what the board looked at. The expectation for this particular plan was maybe $250 billion, not $600 billion at all. And so it was a big shock. This is uncharted territory, too. They've never really taken a step like this to try and temper things. So I think their ultimate goal is to control inflation. They've been pretty verbal about the fact that they are willing to accept some inflation to be able to try and get the economy going. They just don't want runaway inflation.
Now let's talk about some other issues. Of course, the election happened yesterday. Republicans stand to gain or did gain. And I suppose that may have an impact. What happens now, for instance, with things like the blender's tax credit, which is 45 cents a gallon?
Well, in general, everything that I've been able to gather would indicate that with Republicans having a win as big as they did, we'll probably see an extension of that credit. It may drop to 36 cents, but that's good news in terms of the ethanol side of things. It's one of those odd questions because they saw what happened when they totally disbanded the credit when it came to the biodiesel side of things. I think that they're going to be reticent to do that, and certainly after just passing the EPA 15% for cars 2007 and newer.
Also, and you and I sort of have a list here we'd like to go through today. That one's pretty easy to, and it's 45 cents for those who are thinking they haven't heard that one. It's usually referred to as 54 cents, but remember, it changed January 1 to 45 cents. And the expectation is that they extend it for 1 to 2 years, it'd be 45 cents a gallon, possibly, as Jackie said, 36 cents a gallon. How about DDGs going to China? We had a discussion about this. You called and asked me a question the other day about DDGs to China. What did we find out on that?
Well, I think, you know, that's such a large component in the ethanol question. The DDGs going to China, and the question that I called and asked you, Todd, was I had heard that they were getting them taken back to China in on the cargo ships, that their goods come here for absolutely no freight cost. And after some research, we both found out that basically that's the truth. There's no freight on the way back because it's less expensive for the cargo ships to actually take freight back. It's better for their ballast. It's better for everything. And therefore, they're getting their DDGs with no freight. And we also have to remember that that's one of the few products that there is that there's no import tax on.
Right. So what implication does that have for corn and meal? So there's lots of expectation that China might be in the market for corn, but you might want to talk about the implications for soybean and meal.
Well, I think when you look at the soybean and meal part of it, distillers is somewhat of a replacement partially for the meal and partially for corn. It is not just a straight corn replacement. And so it could mean ultimately that they may take less meal from us, but the bigger picture is that the more distillers that they take, and with this type of an incentive, the more corn that gets used from an ethanol standpoint. And so I think the wins are greater than the losses on the meal side.
All right. One other thing, and you've talked about this quite a little bit, with USDA set to release the November crop production report, the price of grain, corn in particular, at fairly high levels. The ethanol industry using corn at a very rapid pace, I think something like 18% faster than last year. A prediction at USDA of 4.7 billion bushels of corn being used for ethanol production, which is above the mandate by 250 million bushels. What are potential pitfalls when we're in a short corn supply year? And you, I think, usually talk to us about this in terms of, well, what if this was a drought as opposed to a crop year where demand were using it all up?
Right. You know, the major pitfall that we all have to be thinking about as producers and is when may the government come back in and actually reduce the ethanol mandate. And at this point in time, unfortunately, even after 2008, there's nothing specific about what level of grain stocks causes them to do that or what price causes them to do that. You know, we're in a very different environment than what we were in 2008. Our ethanol plants really have an incentive to produce DDGs. There's a tremendous market for it right now. And as you move forward, the anticipation is that the market should continue to get better. It's representing a larger portion of their income or their profits. And so there's no real incentive, even if we would see something happen to the mandate, for them to stop. Now, has there been a precedent set as far as the government stepping in if prices got too high? Absolutely. In Brazil, they cut their mandate by 25% when sugar prices got too high. If, let's say, the U.S. government came here and came out tomorrow and said, we're going to reduce this mandate to 80%, we're going to do a 20% reduction, that's almost a billion bushels of corn that comes back onto the balance sheet, at least in the eyes of the trade.
Except that you're saying that the DDGs are such a large part of their profit margin at the ethanol plant that they might continue to use to go ahead and produce?
Well, you know, you have to, as a business, you have to look at it from that perspective. So, you know, the impact that something like that would have had in 2008 is entirely different, I think, in today's environment, when the market for the DDGs is well established and continues to grow. I think the bigger question that we have to think about, what happens to the independent ethanol producer? He needs to be running his plant at full capacity if he can to remain as profitable as possible. What might something like that do to them? How much consolidation could we potentially see within the ethanol market again?
Is there much left to do in the terms of consolidation, do you think?
Well, I think there's more left to do than we might think. When you look at the big players, you know, we're certainly looking at ADM and at Poet, but there's a lot of independent people out there who maybe have one or two or three plants, and maybe they can get by. But anybody who has a single plant, I think it would really be detrimental to them to have this happen, and it would not help us from a cash price either, in the corn market or in any of the grain markets.
So, let's talk about risk management then. What do you do?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm now of the opinion that risk management is more about survival than it is anything else. you have to have yourself prepared. There's some well-known people out here right now that are speculating that by mid-January we're going to see the funds get out of 100,000 contracts of corn, 18,000 of beans, 32,000 of wheat. Whether that's right or that's not right, we have to always be thinking about how it's going to impact the bottom line at the producer level. And beyond that, if we don't see this drop, if we continue to go higher, how's it going to impact elevator margin calls? And I think, and to me, Todd, that's the bigger issue that our producers have to be thinking about. How's it going to actually impact them? We might see cash contracts no longer being written. Your ability to sell grain limited to across the scale with who knows how wide a basis, or in a worst-case scenario, the producer not being paid for what he's already delivered. In fact, there is a documented case right now of an elevator in the Delta that just can't pay because of their margin calls. And so I think that our producers have to have themselves positioned for whatever the market may do, whether it's going to go higher or lower, but they've got to have themselves making cash sales at this point in time and perhaps buying a call back on the board is going to be something that gives them the opportunity to have cash in hand, have a contract written, and still be able to participate. Because remember back in 2008, all of a sudden we stopped seeing cash contracts being written, and suddenly the market took off and went in some of the deferred contracts to over $8.
Yeah, so we saw the cash contracts stop being written in the deferreds, right? But not in the nearbys. But even in the nearbys where you could still sell, the basis widens out
enormously. One of our clients brought that up just the other day. He said, you know, we could still sell corn when corn hit $7. We had no problem. It's just that our cash price was $5.50. That was a major problem.
Anything else you want to talk about before I let you go? Cash rents, anything like that?
Well, you know, one of the things that unfortunately is a byproduct of higher corn prices is higher prices for everything, and that includes rent, and some pretty contentious situations going on in the rent in the rental area. So we're hearing more talk about adjustable cash rents again out there, you know, based off of the farm gate price at the close of the month. In other words, rent sliding with the change in the commodity prices. And I could see that as being something that could be really good because it could take some of the emotion out of that situation where the landlord feels like he's getting shorted and at the same time the tenant who is bearing all the costs of all the higher input would have an opportunity to be able to protect some of his profits.
Jackie, it was a real pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for filling in today. I do appreciate that.
Same thing here, Todd. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. She's out of the Champaign office. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report, and I hope you stay with us. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, major U.S. meat importer Russia will ban sales and processing of deep frozen poultry meat from January 1st next year, both domestic and imported, a step that holds the potential to stop virtually all imports of U.S. chicken to Russia. The head of Russia's Consumer Protection Watchdog Group says that deep freezing and defrosting chicken meat before consumption means the quality deteriorates drastically. Russia, which is a major market for poultry meat from the U.S., Brazil, and the EU, has said it plans to stop importing altogether within 3 years. Some of Russia's leading meat and poultry producers worry that the frozen chicken they use in their processed food products will not be available and that their costs will rise as a consequence. Critics within Russia also say the forthcoming ban has no precedent in world trade and could cause tremendous damage to Russian meat processing and poultry businesses. USDA has unveiled a plan to again approve genetically engineered sugar beets in time for planting next year. a move that would nullify a federal court ruling in August that invalidated the original approval issued by USDA 5 years ago. The USDA's proposal, published yesterday, represents the preliminary stage of the process and will be followed by a 30-day comment period before the department makes a final decision. The USDA laid out three possible options in the proposal, including an option not to reapprove the sugar beets, but said its preferred course of action would be to authorize the commercial production of genetically engineered sugar beets under strict regulations. South Korean President Lee Myung-bak today says the U.S. will be sending an important message on its commitment to free trade if it finally advances a pact it signed with Seoul on opening their markets. The two sides are working to conclude discussions addressing U.S. industry concerns that a free trade deal signed 3 years ago does not do enough to open South Korean markets to U.S. autos and beef. The pact is the largest signed by the U.S. since the North American Free Trade Agreement that went into force in 1984, and some South Korean studies said it could boost U.S.-South Korean bilateral trade by as much as a quarter. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can hear on our website at willag.org. Speaking of listening on our website, we finished up talking with Jackie Bakes a few minutes ago. She's on the website each and every Friday in the pre-opening market report. If you'd like to hear from her again, you can do that at willag.org. Tara Oliver is here to talk about the cash grain market. She's up at Delphi's in Delphi, Indiana, at the Anderson's Climbers facility. Good afternoon to you, Tara. How are you today?
Good afternoon. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm very well. Basis for corn, tell me about it.
And basis for corn has been looking stronger here lately. At Climbers, we've kind of been inching our way up, especially in the nearby, and even starting into the deferred months now, it's continuing to see some strength.
You have an ethanol plant there. Is it running at full capacity?
Yes, we are.
And I suppose that's because the margins are very good?
Yes, ethanol margins are extremely good right now compared to where they have been lately. So we are running at as fast as we can.
And that's not unlike all the rest of the ethanol plants across the nation that producing ethanol much quicker pace at this time of year than you did last year.
Yeah, I mean, with all that we were taking in, we are, you know, trying to produce as fast as we can and keep as much as we can in inventory, especially through the harvest time frame. Most of the ethanol plants in the area, I think, are still producing at full capacity, especially with margins being as good as they are. Everyone wants to capitalize on that.
And so that's basically a margin function. That's not a function of looking out at the marketplace and saying we don't think we're going to have the margins in the future?
It can be a little bit of both. I mean, when you've got good margins, you've got to run with it, and you never know how long they're going to last. So we might as well take advantage of the margins while they are strong because, you know, in a month from now, they could trend the other way.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are 579 for first half November corn, 581 last half and into December, 582 for January, 589 for February, 594 for March, 598 for April, 601 for May, 599 for June, 602 for July, and 509 for next harvest.
Thank you so much, Tara.
No problem.
Tara Oliver is with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. I'll be back in just 2 minutes.
It's National Caramel Custard Day. Ancient Roman cooks were the first to recognize the binding properties of eggs, and food historians generally agree that custard dates to the Middle Ages. By the way, in the last decades of the 19th century, custards were advertised as a health food. Bring on the chocolate pudding. It's also St. Clair of Assisi Day, patron saint of good weather. On this day in agricultural history in 1803, John Gorey was born. an American physician. He was an early pioneer in the invention of the artificial manufacture of ice, refrigeration, and air conditioning. In 1830, George Brayton was born, an American engineer. He invented the first commercial gas internal combustion engine, the principles which later became the basis for the turbine engine. In 1863, Abraham Lincoln declared that Thanksgiving Day would be an annual event celebrated on the last Thursday in November. In 1899, the first motorized vacuum cleaner was patented by John S. Thurman. And in 1941, the first aerosol can was patented by two U.S. Department of Agricultural researchers, L.D. Goodhue and W.N. Sullivan. They were looking for a way to apply oil-free insecticides in mushroom houses. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Drew. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
I'm very well. It's a lot colder today than it has been. It looks like November skies are starting to clear out just a bit, but it's been great pretty much all day long.
Yeah, it is November. I know it's hard to believe. It's taken us a long time to cool down this year, but we are definitely moving that way. We've got a strong surface high-pressure system that's settling into the region. It's going to blow the wind around a bit for the next 24 hours. Nothing like what we had last week, but we're still going to have some breezy conditions and falling temperatures, and we'll end up with some low temperatures in the 20s and 30s across a fair amount of the Midwest over the next couple of mornings, and we'll also have highs that are limited to the 30s and 40s in the north and 40s and 50s in the south. So definitely a couple of nippy days, but there is a good ridge of high pressure coming in behind it. We should go back the other way as we get into the weekend and early part of next week, so we should see a fairly decent warm-up, and that sets the stage for a change in weather patterns again about a week from now, and that will start bringing precipitation back across the middle of the country in a greater significance, hopefully fixing some of the dry biases in some of these wheat areas.
Yeah, well, I wanted to bring that up because we have wheat areas that do have dry biases. Can you outline them for me and where they might be?
Well, probably the biggest problem area in hard red wheat country is in western and some central Kansas locations as well as eastern Colorado. That area has gone, it's been well over 60 days since they've had a good amount of rain. It hasn't been dry, absolutely, but they've seen less than half of normal rainfall for the past 2 months, so pretty dry there. And, of course, we've got dryness that is scattered across the Midwest. We got a little bit of rain in the past week or so in parts of the region, but the ground was so dry in some of these areas before the rain arrived that I don't think that the wheat crops have really had a chance to really benefit from it. We need follow-up moisture, and the driest areas in the Midwest still run from some locations in Missouri and Illinois right into Ohio and still extends down into the northern delta as well. So some of those driest areas have been dry probably since August, and there's a real serious problem with moisture shortages in some of the water supply, river and streams,
right,
and the water reservoirs across the region.
Okay, and then take me to Ukraine, Russia, the Black Sea area. That's where we had dry problems in the summer and their past crop, but they should have sown a crop and were trying to. Did they get those dry areas fixed?
Well, the Ukraine did, I think, and some of the crop that was planted late is now being blessed by some warmer than normal temperatures, so the crop is getting a chance to establish a little bit better. But some of the south central areas of Russia have not seen a very good recovery. They've had a little bit of moisture, but they're a long way from being back to normal, and I don't think they got any of that winter crop in the ground, or if they did, it was a small portion of what they should have.
Yeah, and very quickly, I can only give you about 10 seconds to talk about South America.
Well, Argentina's got some dry pockets that are going to start expanding a little bit, so we need to watch that real closely. And in Brazil, it looks pretty good for timely rainfall for a while, but be real careful as we get into the latter part of this month in December. We're probably going to see some dryness in southern and western Brazil as well.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
You too. And that is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Wednesday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.